hour number two on a Friday. Shout out to one of Trey's favorite musicians on earth, one of mine as well, Gary Clark Jr. Fantastic album, Black and Blue. Everything he's done is fantastic, but this is a track off of that album. Hope you're having a good Friday. Trey is recovering from COVID. He's feeling much better. Hopefully we will have him back sometime next week. We're trying to figure all that out. Monday, Bucky Godbolt has agreed to come in and do the show with me. I do appreciate that. You've already heard the other guys helping out, including today. Kevin Dunn's going to jump in at 2, and we'll talk some baseball and Longhorns. So the guys are helping as they always do. We help each other. We're a family around here, and everybody was reaching out right away of, hey, man, let me know if you need something. Let me know if you need something. So I do appreciate that. And obviously we hope Trey gets better very soon. He said he was feeling a lot better yesterday, and he has had mild symptoms, I think, max so far. Everything's been mild overall, so that has been good news. If you're just jumping in, just some of the quick updates. We did tell you A.J. Hinch, new manager for the Detroit Tigers, after the La Russa story yesterday. Faison Wilson of Lancaster does decommit from Texas last evening, just like 2 evenings ago. It was Quinn Ewers, and the thought yesterday was, yeah, don't expect those two guys in the 22 class to stick around, and certainly one of them is already has already decommitted. And, of course, there's a big NFL weekend coming up. By the way, quick update on the Cowboys. They're not ruling out Andy Dalton yet. Mike McCarthy says he will not rule him out. Maybe that's just a little gamesmanship and DiNucci's really going to go, but who knows? Maybe Andy Dalton is able to go and clear concussion protocol. We will see. And of course, Trevor Lawrence testing positive for the coronavirus is the biggest story in really all of sports today, if you want to really weigh it all out. They play Boston College tomorrow morning, but they'll do it without that guy. So DJ Ui Agalele is going to take over. 6'4", 250. Should be interesting. All right, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline and have our weekly conversation with Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. We hope that's always interesting for you. It's always is for me, and I hope for Dustin. How are you, Dustin?
I'm doing well, Chad. Yeah, I hope it is interesting for those people out there. I would think it is.
Well, I mean, I can't really help them if this week's is not interesting, because I got to get you to talk some Texas, and that circus is always interesting. And if you don't want to talk Steelers, Ravens this week, well, I don't know what to do with you. So we'll get to that one, because I know you're a Steelers guy. But let's start with these Longhorns. We'll work our way up to better football. Texas and Oklahoma State, I've been bringing up just the basic facts, and it's not enough for Texas fans, but Tom Herman has not won a road game against a ranked team. True road against a ranked team, it just hasn't happened. This would be that first time, and I understand 6 years into a coaching career and 4 years in at Texas is too late to do that, Dustin. I get it. But how much do you think he could gain from it? If I don't even tell you what it looks like, but I tell you he wins tomorrow afternoon, how much calm down do you think that could cause?
It always depends on how it looks like. You can go into these sorts of matchups and you can play a really good game and just come up on the short end. But obviously this is a situation where in order for even the smallest possibility of things calming down, you got to get out of there with a win. So, it would depend on how it looks, but more than anything, I think it might just confuse people a little bit, but I'm not sure how much calming down can be done regardless of the result this weekend. I think that the calming down would have to occur for the next weeks after that. Like, we're talking like a running the table type of situation. So, yeah, it certainly would help, but I think instead of calming, it would almost be like it would kind of confuse some people a little bit. Because I just don't see, this thing is just burning so hot that I really don't know how much a win would even calm those flames down.
Because then it would turn into a phrase we've all said as fans before. It would turn into, where has this been? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, more or less. It's just kind of like, okay, like this is the sort of thing that we've been waiting on, but it's just kind of like the fool me once thing, fool me twice. You know, it's like, okay, like you showed me this, but where's it been, and can it continue moving forward?
Yeah. Dustin, I really enjoyed and it wasn't there much against Baylor, but I loved the combination of Bijan Robinson at running back and Jared Wiley at tight end. I don't know that it takes a football scholar to figure out those two kind of worked well together. And then they weren't together again for, I don't know, a quarter and a half or whatever it was. But if that is a good combination, then what kind of things do you like for those guys? Like, on the, let's say there's just a couple plays, but what kind of things do you like there with those guys? And am I crazy? I mean, that was the best combination, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, you like guys when you get them the ball, they make things happen, or they're creating space, or they're open. I mean, this is an offense that needs some explosive element, and I think those are two of the guys probably best suited to provide that right now, and especially if you're so set on trying to establish the run like Texas was that last game against Baylor. But, yeah, you need playmakers. You need guys that kind of, you know, cause the defense to account for where those guys are on the field in certain situations. And, you know, especially against an Oklahoma State team that's so good at getting after the quarterback, you need some touches to the running back coming out of the backfield in the pass game. You need to involve the tight end some. And who better than Wiley, who just with his athleticism and his size, he can do the inline blocking. You can move him out of the formation. You can kind of do a lot of different things with how you line up, even though you're keeping the same personnel. So, yeah, this is an offense that needs playmakers. And right now those are two guys that are showing the most signs of being able to provide that.
And this week, Tom Herman gave an answer about Jarrett Wiley that I didn't quite understand. Tell me if you heard it the same way. If I'm Jarrett Wiley and I heard my coach basically say, oh, yeah, you know, he's played well, he's done what we told him to do, but he was running wide open down the field on this play, and he was doing this on this play, so I don't know if it was really us or him. So he's basically telling his player, look, it wasn't that you were that good, you were just that open. But if I'm the player, aren't I thinking, well, no, I was that open because I'm that good.
I mean, it's like if you're getting open, something's happening, you know. And that's to me one of the most perplexing things of that game was Texas didn't really challenge Baylor down the field, and yet Jarrett Wiley was like wide open on multiple occasions. Tariq Black had a huge game because of a blown coverage, and it's like Texas went away from that. You know, there's that play before halftime where I know he was kind of facing some pressure, but Sam Ellinger had Josh Moore wide open.
Oh, yeah.
Type situation, and it's just like if that sort of thing's happening, why not do it more regardless of whether you think it's them or the player or whatever it is? And if I'm Wiley, if I'm looking at my stat sheet and I'm like, every time I touch the ball, it's usually a huge game, so we might try to look my way a little bit more.
So, Dustin, I'm talking to Dustin McComas, OrangeBloods.com. Obviously, you have been a Texas fan a long, long, long time. You have been in the business a long time. You've also followed recruiting a long time. Can you think, off the top of your head, I'm sure you've been asked to think about this, too, in the last day or so, is there a punch to the gut, is there a kick to the crotch for Longhorn fans that rivals this, that rivals the Quinn Ewers thing? Like, is it Paraloo? Is it like, is there something you could put on that level just on its face, not how it turned out, but at that moment that felt like this Ewers thing feels?
I don't think so. And part of that too is where this comes and kind of this progression of like this buildup from the fan base in terms of just, you know, just being so frustrated with what's happening. I mean, we're not that far from removed from the Brockermeyer's thing, which I think was maybe the biggest Texas recruiting loss since I've been following recruiting. You know, that's a legacy guy, two guys at a need position, and one of them happens to be, you know, maybe the best offensive tackle prospect in the country. And so that's part of the equation. And you know, it was just one thing after another. And then, you know, Ewers was such a signal of, like, there's still something out there. There's still something you can kind of look forward to. You know, if you can just kind of right the ship and you got guys like that in the picture and what he could do for that 2022 class, because this 2021 class, even before the Ewers decommit, it was kind of an empty class. But if you had that guy to kind of point to, you still had some signs of hope. But just where it came in this progression of just how, you know, how much buildup there's been of Texas fans being frustrated with the program, I really can't compare it to anything. I mean, at least when you're talking about some of the losses that back in the Mac era, he was recruiting so well that I was like, okay, you still got a lot of good players to be excited about. Like, yeah, the Ryan Paley type, those types of things suck. But there's still a lot of other really good players that were going to come to school. The problem right now for Texas is the 2021 class isn't like a MAC class. It isn't like a 2018, 2019 Texas class under Tom Herman. They desperately need those types of players, and they're missing at a point where in the state, Those guys are starting to be produced at a really, really high level that we just haven't seen in a few years.
So I mentioned the Faison Wilson thing earlier, decommitting last night. Is the expectation that Jalen Gilbo of Port Arthur is going to do the same thing, or is there a thought that maybe he's going to stay firm?
You never like when a guy retweets another decommitment and then says, you know, something along the lines of, I have some thinking to do. So, I don't know if that's the expectation, but that's certainly a guy that I think we're paying close attention to. And you know, even Jatavion Sanders as well, a big-time guy in the 2021 class. Like, I unfortunately for Texas, I don't think we've seen the last of the decommitments.
All right, let me hit something good before we get off the Longhorn discussion. I saw you breaking down a little extra Joseph Osai in the rewatch of the game. Right now for you, is number 46 as good as all the rest of this is bad?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it says so much about that young man that every single time he's out there, just the motor's always running. You know, it would be easy for, you know, some guys to kind of pack it in, you know, and say, you know what, this is really frustrating. I could have opted out. I could have done this or that. All these reasons feel sorry for himself. You know, the season's not going the way I want it to go. And every time you put on the film for that guy, he's just, it doesn't stop. I mean, it's relentless effort every single play. I mean, that's the kind of guy that you kind of dream of having leading your defense and things like that. So, yeah, while we kind of talk about all these negative things and things like that, he's definitely a really, really good thing. And, you know, I think he kind of rubs off on his teammates. So you put on the tape of that Baylor game, defense was playing hard. You know, I highlighted a play on Twitter of Anthony Cook just doing his job and playing really hard. He ended up occupying two blockers in a bubble screen so his teammates could come make a tackle for a loss. Like, you know, while Texas is you know, having some issues in the results category, effort's not an issue, and I think that's partially because you got guys like Osai that are out there just on a different level with their effort. I mean, how fun was it to watch him and Terrell Bernard for Baylor? I mean, those guys,
yeah.
Those are the kind of guys that NFL people love to try to get in their organization.
Well, yeah, and Dustin, the kind of disruption he can provide is what could get to Oklahoma State. Their offensive line is not phenomenal here, so he's a big part of it. Do you expect him to play tomorrow? Is there any reason to believe that they're not going to just tape him up and brace him up and 46 will go?
Yeah, judging from what Tom Herman said earlier this week, I mean, I'm expecting him out there. And knowing what kind of competitor he is and the way he plays, I think it would take a lot for him not to be on that field. But, yeah, it's, you know, this could be the battle of the offensive lines, really, in terms of which group doesn't hurt their quarterback the most. Because we know Oklahoma State can get after the quarterback. But we know, too, on the other side, that Oklahoma State offensive line is having some issues. And I think, you know, after a really lackluster performance against Oklahoma, I think the Texas defensive line kind of woke up a little bit in terms of some providing some pass rush. It really forced Baylor to kind of go to a lot more quick hitters and things like that. So, yeah, the team that has the offensive line that just isn't the worst could be the one that wins on Saturday.
Talking to Dustin McComas, orangebloods.com. Last night was Thursday night, so it was War Room night at Orange Bloods. Check out all the great stuff there, at DMcComasOB on Twitter as well. Dustin McComas is a Steelers fan, so we always talk a little Steelers with him, even when they're not playing the great games. This is the game for them. Steelers, Ravens. Dustin, I saw so many good stats this week, but since 1999, 23 wins apiece is maybe my favorite in this ball game. So what sucks for you and all Steelers fans is that you have these three road games in a row and the Ravens come off a bye. That obviously is advantage Ravens, plus they're at home. Outside of that, give me the football thing that worries you. Is it the lack of Devin Bush? Is there something else? What is the matchup thing or the issue you got going in where you're thinking, oh, man, got to have that figured out?
It's a great question. You know, I can't really recall a game recently where – and this is one of the reasons why I thought the Titans were kind of a worrisome matchup. It's just what they could do with their explosive pass game off the play action. But I can't recall a recent game when the Steelers have really been tested down the field in the pass game, just a vertical threat. And, you know, when you have some of the weapons that the Ravens have and they kind of get that run game going, I think the Steelers safeties have been pretty decent. I don't think they've been spectacular. I don't think Minkah Fitzpatrick has quite been – I know he had that great interception against Baker Mayfield, but I don't think he's quite been the guy he was last year yet. And I just, you know, this will be a real test for the Steelers in terms of, okay, you know you've got to commit bodies to Lamar Jackson. You know you got to keep, you know, where he is at all times. You know they want to run the football. You know when they do this and that. But can you cover down the field when they take those shots? And that, to me, is the thing that will probably worry me the most, because I don't think the Steelers have really been truly tested like that yet this season. But they're going to be tested in a big way on Sunday.
Yeah, the Titans love that play-action stuff, but they don't feel near as vertical as what the Ravens can do.
Right.
The Ravens can go vertical on you quick.
Yeah. With the Titans, it's kind of more side-to-side type of thing, and they'll stretch it a little vertically. But, yeah, when the Ravens take their shots, I mean, they're bombing it down the field. And the Steelers just quite haven't seen that sort of situation. You know, even when they played the Eagles weren't operating nearly at full capacity. I don't think DeSean Jackson played in that game. They haven't really seen the type of vertical threat that the Ravens are going to throw at them.
So, Dustin, you obviously watch Ben Roethlisberger as closer than anybody does. Last week I thought was fascinating. JD comes on with us every week to talk fantasy football, and he reminds us all the time of the Ben Roethlisberger thing. If he's on the road, you probably don't want to play him. If he's at home, you do. That's kind of what some fantasy guys believe in. And he showed us both of the sides in this game with Tennessee. He started off just dealing. I mean, it was incredible. And then something turned. And he kind of, the fact that he screwed that play up at the end of the first half and threw a pick when he was given a field goal, that game could have been a 6-point game at the end. All he had to do was just take the field goal, but he got a little greedy. As a fan, do you see something happen in Ben? Is it a footwork thing for you? Is it an offensive line issue? Like, can you see when that change happens and then it's like, oh, God, here comes the Ben I need to worry about?
Yeah, it's almost like he gets too confident, you know? Like, he started the game so well. I mean, that first touchdown pass to Deontay Johnson, he fit between two guys. I mean,
yeah,
that was an elite NFL throw. Like, you had to put some zip on that thing and put it in the right spot at the right time, or it's getting batted down and possibly going the other way. So I think as that game got going, he just started getting more and more confident. And there's just some times where, I don't know if it's a road thing that maybe he feels like he's got to overcompensate and take more shots because it's just, you know, it's more difficult to win on the road. But it just, sometimes you see him, he gets the confidence really going, and you're like, uh-oh, you know, like you can't, you know, don't force one of those right now in that situation. And that's what he did. I thought that was going to, you know, cost the Steelers a football game, you know, when that happened, because he had some opportunities to kind of check that down. You get into field goal range, Boswell's been pretty good. You forced Tennessee, you forced them, I think, to use a timeout if they had timeouts left, but the clock would have kept going. So, yeah, it's just, he gets so confident sometimes. And I think that maybe when he's on the road, he almost feels like he's got to try to make things happen a little more than when he's at home.
All right, Dustin, before I let you go, I just came up with a weird hypothetical. If I can guarantee you, as a Steelers fan, that you're going 15-1 this regular season, the loss can either be the Ravens or it could be the field. What do you want?
Oh, so either I'm losing to anybody else in the NFL or the Ravens. I mean, I don't want to lose to those guys. Like, I take the field.
You'll
like,
take the field? Even if it could be my Cowboys, though, that beat you if you take the field.
I was going to say, like, I will take that. Like,
all right.
I will take that.
Okay.
Anybody but them, especially, too, because, you know, if they go steal this one, man, what does that do for that divisional race?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a big type of swing game early on in the season. So, yeah, I will absolutely take the field, even if it means Garrett Gilbert is quarterbacking the Cowboys.
That is great. And by the way, we have this great group of older quarterbacks in the league and younger quarterbacks in the league. This is the first time because of injury that Lamar and Ben have faced each other, correct?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
Yeah.
And please don't remind me of the last quarterback performances from the Steelers, especially the one that ended last regular season against the Ravens.
Yeah, no, we don't need to talk about those things. Those things won't even be, I would never mention those things because then you wouldn't come on next Friday. I know better than that. That's Dustin McComas, orangebloods.com. We talk to him every Friday about the Longhorns, sometimes about the Steelers, and about a lot of other stuff too. Dustin, always appreciate the time, man. Best of luck to the Longhorns. I'd say best of luck to the Steelers, but I wouldn't mean it. So just have a good weekend, but I can't wait for that game, dude. It's one of my favorite football games on earth. I respect the hell out of both teams, and I just want to see what happens. So enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Have a great weekend. Take care.
All right. Good stuff there. He's on the Steelers side of things. If you're on the Ravens side with me and others, we'll be rooting for Lamar and the crew. I'm going to have to keep it tempered in the house on Sunday because my wife is a Steelers fan through and through, and she's up screaming, yelling, pacing. I just try to stay kind of calm and not get anything thrown at me. Thanks to Dustin for his time. Speaking of the NFL, let's talk a little more about NFL Week 8. We've got college football Week 9, how the Trevor Lawrence thing obviously factors into all of that. We'll do all that coming up. Also at 2, Kevin Dunn of the Triple Option jumps in, more on the Longhorns and his thoughts on what we might see in Stillwater tomorrow. And I want to ask him about baseball and what lessons we have to learn from the Blake Snell thing in the World Series. Also coming up at 1:45, Sam Pica with Where Are We At in Society. Plus, if you missed part one of Trey's interview with Bruce Campbell of Evil Dead fame, part two is coming up at 2:30, and a little later on, we'll tell you where you can find the whole interview. The screening of Evil Dead is tomorrow at the Paramount. Go to austintheater.org for more information. More coming on the Horn.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Would this be off the Chucky soundtrack? Is that what you're doing?
I wish. That would be hard, bro, if they had Ghetto Boys blasting on the Chucky soundtrack.
Theme from Chucky? The Ghetto Boys weren't on the soundtrack?
No, you know, Child's Play kind of dissed them a little bit.
That's a shame. That is a shame. Ghetto Boys were they Houston?
I think so, yeah.
Is that right?
They were H-Town.
I did see Child's Play back in the day. That's one that doesn't scare me. That doesn't scare me. If you have something other than people killing people, like normal, everyday people killing people, that terrifies me. Everything else I can deal with. I can deal with possessed dolls. Like I saw Poltergeist. Whatever. Like I said earlier, if I saw Exorcist, I don't think it would freak me out that much. The idea of like demon possession or whatever, that doesn't get me. What gets me is it's the middle of the day, I look out the window, and Mike Myers is standing in the yard just blankly staring back at me.
It was about the tension, I feel like, for Chucky. Like the scene, you've seen the movie,
right?
Oh,
I've seen it.
Like the battery scene, bro?
Oh, yeah.
When she goes to check?
No, I know.
That's scary as hell.
I know. Oh, no, it's scary in its own little realm, but the idea of, because it's just one of those things that my brain tells me, like, right, but yeah, dolls don't get possessed, and that's not dangerous to me. That helps me just get through it. Animals killing people, got no problem with that. Gremlins, whatever. Whatever.
Whoever voiced Chucky too, that's a creepy-ass voice.
He was terrifying. Yeah, you're right. Real creepy, real scary. And they did a lot with that movie. When you just lay that movie out in your head, it doesn't seem like it could be successful. But it was a pretty big deal. They made a big deal out of that movie. Maybe it's Chucky. Maybe you're checking that one out as we get to the eve of Halloween here. And hopefully, if you got kids, you got something figured out on the trick-or-treat front. Mine is past that point, so I have no idea what our neighborhood's doing, and I don't know if we're handing anything out or not. I don't know if they're coming to the door. I have really no clue. I'm looking forward to November 1st in a lot of ways. But we'll get some Halloween spooky music to you as we roll through today. We got a lot of stuff going on in the world of football. Earlier, I asked Longhorn fans about where they are on this team right now. There's a lot of different things coming in. And this text says, Ellinger's missing wide open receivers all year, staring down his first target. Why has he regressed so bad? That regression is a part of the story. There are missed moments from Sam. There are moments when the biggest players on this team let you down. There's a guy that the coaches think translates into a center at the NFL level. He's let you down a couple times with bonehead penalties. You can't do that. He's also kind of let you down with the blocking part of it. So has that guy out at left tackle. So have receivers. So have running backs. I mean, there's just, you know, some of the best players on this team, some of the guys that have even been named captains at times are letting them down. That's what's got to change in Stillwater. Somebody else texted me earlier, got to have that ratio. I think somebody looked up and turnover ratio for the year might be right at zero, but like they said, got to win the turnovers tomorrow in Stillwater. Absolutely. Win turnovers and win penalties and just see where it gets you. They cut those penalties down to 5 against Baylor. Hopefully that matters. No matter who you're playing, the cleanliness of your play hopefully can translate, and maybe they can take that with them to Stillwater. Biggest college football story of the day is easily Trevor Lawrence. Definitely hated to hear about it. Now let's see what it does to Clemson. This colder weather around the country is obviously either beginning or it's already begun in certain areas. I don't know if that's why we're seeing some of the stories we are about offensive lines in the NFL getting hit with COVID-19. Will we hear a story about Trevor Lawrence? Does somebody have a video that comes out of, well, you know, Trevor was here and he didn't have a mask on? Is it that? Or, you know, how will we find out? Was it some kind of negligence on his part? I wouldn't think that's the case because he's been right there from the front. He was in that group that said, no, we want to play and we want to figure this out. So hopefully he'll be able to play against Notre Dame. If he does, I was thinking about this today too. If he doesn't play, it's not end of the world. Even if he doesn't play and Notre Dame beats them, it's not end of the world because the turnaround would be fairly simple. They don't have to play North Carolina, but then they, you would assume, be the second best team or still could be tied with Notre Dame, even if Notre Dame lost a game. Actually, at that point, Notre Dame would not need to lose the game. But you know what? Even if they lost it, they could still end up in the ACC title game with a loss, play Notre Dame again. Theoretically, Trevor's back by that point. If they beat Notre Dame, then they'd have to be in, right? A one-loss Clemson team? They're going to go into the playoff. So all of that is out there, but tomorrow we get to check out the kid, DJ Ui. Let's see if I can do this. Uiagalele. I love that. The Hawaiian name with every little part of the word pronounced. Uiagalele, I believe, is how that is done. You can just call him DJ if you want, but this is a 6'4, 250 kid. Got that big frame to him. Going to see more. You'll see even more running at quarterback, I think, than you would with Trevor Lawrence. Let's see how he runs the offense. Let's see if Boston College can keep it close. They're a pretty hard-hitting team from what I understand. I've not had a chance to really focus in on them. But tomorrow morning, when we fire up Longhorn Game Day, brought to you by Coors Light, they will get started. BC at Clemson, ABC kick at 11 o'clock. So that is going on with Clemson. We'll keep an eye on that story, of course. You've also got some of the big dogs in action. Handle Your Business for Bama hosting Mississippi State. Handle Your Business for Notre Dame at Georgia Tech. They go to Atlanta. Georgia Tech does not feel like a good team this year. Can Ian Book and that crew keep the momentum going? What I like about Notre Dame, when they're on, when they click, Notre Dame's complimentary football thing goes through the roof. It feels like their offense helps their defense, which helps their special teams. It just feels like everything starts clicking. And that's why they end up with 45-3 against Pitt. Can they keep that going this week? I want to watch them. The ranked matchup of the week is also fascinating. Ohio State and Penn State, Saturday 6:30, ABC. It's not a true whiteout. They are going to have some fans there, but that place is normally a nut house. But it won't be. So how does that help Ohio State? Justin Fields gets to go. I've said this about Aaron Rodgers this year. Justin Fields gets to go to Happy Valley and hear the call? He can hear the play call? Well, that's got to be weird. The receiver, like Olave and Garrett Wilson, they can hear him? Like if he audibled, they might actually be able to hear him at Happy Valley. That just doesn't happen. So what does the football part of it look like, too? Penn State statistically abused Indiana. I went back and rewatched that game last night. The mistakes that Penn State made, forget about the should have scored or shouldn't have scored at the end. Well before that, the penalties, two missed field goals, one of them a chippy. They missed a 25-yard field goal. Do you understand how many high school kickers can hit a 25-yard field goal? They doinked one off the upright, missed two field goals, the two big turnovers. And you want to know why the yards were so out of whack? Because they didn't just turn the ball over. They were like turning the ball over, and Indiana was starting drives at they're at the 5. Hey, where's this drive start? The 12. What? What? You turned it over there? Penn State was just horribly sloppy. Then they missed the detail at the end, where they were trying to figure it out, up 21-20. Then they lose Noah Cain during the game. He was gone on the first drive, so that's something to factor into it as well. By the way, unlike the Atlanta screw-up this week with the Falcons, what about this in the Penn State game? once the running back goes over the goal line and you've screwed up and you would have just downed it, and I guess they would have killed it for 21-20 or at the very worst tried a field goal, and if they missed it, who cares? I was just trying to get it blocked. But my next thought was, is there a thought to going Romeo Crennel there? You're up one. You just scored to go 27-20, and you apparently don't have faith in your defense. Now, why don't you have faith in your defense? I'm not sure, because they've dominated Indiana the whole game. But if you had really lost your faith, why not a play with Sean Clifford from the two? This is old man football saying you might want to go for two, but you could make it two scores right there. That's what Romeo Crennel was trying to do. He had a defense he didn't trust and a quarterback that he did. I totally get that logic. That tells me exactly what you think of your team. But it doesn't mean you're wrong. I never heard that part of the discussion. Penn State, maybe once you make that mistake, maybe you go ahead and kick. Go ahead and go for two. But can they hang with Ohio State is the question. I think Ohio State's going to roll them up. Maybe it's because Nebraska really isn't that good. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like a good matchup for Penn State. But, man, I hope they can make it close. That is the only ranked matchup of the weekend. Other games going on that you may want to check out. Cincinnati's got an 11 a.m. kick. Can they continue to go after beating SMU? Michigan. Can Michigan beat Michigan State like they're supposed to? Did you watch Michigan-Minnesota? Because I rewatched the whole thing. What a weird game full of big plays and huge, long. It was, I'm not saying Michigan didn't earn it. It was just weird. It was a weird game. I told you earlier in the week about the screw up PJ Fleck had where he could have gone to the half down 11 instead of down 18. And it just kind of got away from him from there. I want to see if Michigan can make it a full normal four quarters, because you're just not going to have a wacky game like that all the time. They should dominate Michigan State for the Paul Bunyan Trophy. I want to see if they do that. And then regionally, a big question around these parts is going to be, is A&M ready for some prosperity, and can they continue to beat Arkansas? They're 8-0 in the SEC against Arkansas, and Arkansas looks a little more real. The Aggies have been forgotten about in the last couple weeks, just kind of drifting after beating Mississippi State. The next two teams they play are Arkansas and South Carolina, 14-0 combined since they joined the SEC. These are the games that nobody peeks in on. Is A&M ready to win them? Is Mond better? Does Jimbo have this team dialed up the right way? Or is it something else? A Texas fan texted me earlier in the week and said, you know, I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you, what's going on in College Station does not make any of this easier. The stuff going on with Texas. That's totally realistic. We all know the House divided pays attention to each other. And if you're a Longhorn fan right now, if you watch your team go to Stillwater and get beat, and A&M beats Arkansas, let's say they do it handily, that's not good. That is not good for you and what you are trying to accomplish. This state has been up for grabs essentially since 2010, but really since Art Briles got kicked out. Nobody's grabbed a hold of it. And for the first year in a long time, A&M actually feels like they might have some substance to them. That's got to concern you if you're a Texas fan, because there are going to be obviously big recruiting battles coming where kids will come down to you and the Aggies, and you want to make sure you're making the right argument. Lots of games to check out tomorrow. Remember, we crank up at 11 o'clock with Longhorn Game Day, brought to you by Coors Light, as we get ready for Texas and Oklahoma State. On the NFL side, Pittsburgh and Baltimore. If you watch nothing else, you watch that game, noon kick. That is going to be something. First time Ben Roethlisberger and Lamar Jackson have gotten together. All right, 2 o'clock, Kevin Dunn coming in from the Triple Option to talk some Longhorns and baseball. Up next, where are we at in society? Sam Pica will let me and all of you know on the horn. This one has definitely been on the TV lately, both Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2. Little Ray Parker Jr. for the kids. Come on now. Does anybody own this song?
I don't know.
Like, does somebody have this song where they bought this song and they love it? Like in July.
Oh,
they love it.
As a kid for me, for sure, bro. Ghostbusters was big.
Right.
I had the video game. I actually just started playing the video game again.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. Good memories.
What is that on? Is that a console game or what?
They remastered it. I'm playing it on the computer. It was on like the 360 back in the day.
All right. So you get to be one of the guys? Like you get to be Spangler or you get to be whoever?
You're like a new recruit. And they're kind of like trying to teach you the ways of ghost busting.
Okay.
So you get to go to some of like the steadfast locations from the movie and whatnot. And then you also go to some new places and fight some new goofy ghosts.
Okay.
And they got the whole cast in the game, which is crazy.
You get to fire the thing and put them in the trap.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. You get to throw the trap out. You get to fight the ghosts and everything. And they got the whole cast, which nobody ever voices themselves in a video game from actual movies.
By the way, one of the many things we have either lost or had postponed with COVID was this new Ghostbusters idea that they had cooked up. I saw the preview, and I'm really skeptical about that kind of stuff. But I'm thinking, I don't know. They might have figured something out here.
I hate kids in movies.
They might have figured something out.
I hate kids in movies, bro. Don't do it. Don't kidify all these movies.
That's a weird movie theory, but it's not. You're not alone in this. That's the Brad Kellner theory. Like, Brad says that's why he hates Stand By Me. He's like, I don't care what kids do.
See, Stand By Me is different, though.
I'm like, wait, what do you mean you don't care what kids do? What are you talking about? This is a guy reminiscing back to being a kid, and it was still like in lessons learned and all that. And I just don't care. Don't care what kids do. Okay, fair enough. So it is, of course, the day before Halloween, so we'll get you some spooky, scary music. And coming up, the second part of the interview that Trey did with a scary movie legend, Bruce Campbell of Evil Dead fame, talked with Trey. We played you part of it earlier, and they are screening Evil Dead tomorrow at the Paramount. Go to austintheater.org to find out about tickets, the VIP ticket information, to check that out. We'll play part two of the interview for you at 2:30. That'll be part of why October 30th matters today, because we got that going on. And we'll start the interview with the story of how Stephen King factors into Evil Dead. I never heard any stories about this, but Bruce gets into some good stuff there. Some stuff I didn't know about Stephen King and his relationship to that movie. So that's all coming up at 2:30. Right now, though, let's see if we can fix society with Sam.
Where are we at in society today?
Where are we at in society? Brought to you by Lynch Plumbing, commercial and residential services. When you're in a pinch, call Lynch 512-450-3416 online, lynchplumbingtx.com.
Also, Sam, I will let you get there. I promise. I hate to Kanye West you, but thank you to the listeners who pointed out that Uiagalelei is a Samoan name, not a Hawaiian name. So my mistake, DJ Uiagalelei, a Samoan name. Thank you very much. All right, Sam, here we go.
All right, so I got a couple spooky, possibly askew to spooky at least, stories for you today.
All right.
So this is a fun one because it gives us a little bit of the spooky and a little bit of the sexy.
Okay, spooky and sexy. Some people really enjoy that.
So Miss Angela Nava, a Richmond homeowner and big-time Halloween fan, thought that this year, instead of going scary with her decor, she'd go goofy. Because, I mean, it's 2020, man. We've had enough spooks. We've had enough scares already.
I'm with her.
So she set up a thing that she calls the Candy Shop, a full-out monster strip club on her front lawn. Every night, she cycles out the different monster decorations, dancing on the pole. They're, it ranges from everything from skeletons to Frankensteins to mummies to vampires, and they're all twerking and grinding for her neighborhood's joys and pleasures.
And she's got them, like, animatronically moving and stuff?
So, they don't animatronically move. She couldn't, obviously drop that much cash into them.
She sets them up
and whatnot.
Okay.
And the titular, no pun intended, Miss Candy of the Candy Shop is literally your typical Halloween skeleton decoration with like a blue cotton candy colored wig glued to her head.
Gotcha.
Now, this is where it gets a little more spooky.
Okay.
Because there is one organization that every homeowner fears more than anyone.
HOA.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So she got contacted by her local homeowners association, who has now sent her several letters telling her to take down the candy shop, stating that it is illicit and offensive to everyone in the neighborhood. But Angie's hanging in there, Chad.
Yeah.
In a recent interview by ABC, she stated, "I don't plan to take it down until Halloween is over."
There you go.
People have been coming from all over to see the candy shop.
Well, yeah.
And it's making people happy, man.
Of course.
What is wrong with you setting up a cheesy strip club? It's not like things are actually getting naked.
Well, and that's why I asked you if they were moving. The things aren't moving because I knew this was working its way towards someone being offended. It's 2020. So if nothing's moving and there's not like, it's not like she's playing girls, girls, girls and Pour Some Sugar on Me, is she?
I think she does have music going.
She does have music?
Yeah, she's got like stripper music going.
As long as the music is at a reasonable volume, maybe you can get away with that. To me, this is just like, let your neighbors be. I guess if you're the next door neighbor or you're the across the street neighbor, maybe it could get distracting. But dude, up the street from me and down a little ways, they have set up this fortress of zombies. Like there's a fence, there's zombies, there's a zombie with like a stake in his chest and all that, and every
Hell
time
yeah.
I drive by it, it totally like grosses me out. It's not my thing, but I'm not gonna stop and tell them that.
But you're a Halloween party pooper all around.
I am, but that's what I'm saying. I'm not gonna stop and be like, excuse me, this is a little too far. No, you just keep going, like drive by. What is the problem?
I love this strip club idea.
I do too.
A lot of the pictures, I saw like a Chewbacca-esque Wolfman looking thing. I don't know how she set it up, but it had just like a cheesy bra on it, you know,
right.
like a bikini top.
This is funny.
And it's like gripping a pole. Like, what is offensive about this?
That is funny. But you got to understand, some people, just the imagery of a strip club does offend people. So they're going to be upset. I know.
Well, like we were saying, it is almost Halloween. So it's a good time to talk about things that make us afraid, Chad.
Okay.
Are there any things that you're afraid of that you're willing to share with the people?
Like, again, back in the day after Mike Myers, I was scared of the dark for a long time as a little kid. Oh, my God. But right now, we talked about this one not long ago, too, when Trey asked me that. I think my biggest one would just be fear of small spaces, cramped spaces.
Okay.
My wife told me about a movie where Ryan Reynolds is in a coffin like the whole movie. I don't think I could watch it.
Buried. That's a good one, bro.
I don't think I could watch the whole thing. I've had scenes like Kill Bill Volume 2. That scene with Uma Thurman, it's phenomenal. It's one of the best scenes of the movie. But boy, if it had been 2 minutes, 3 minutes longer, whew, I'm not sure I'd have made it.
Well, this next story might not tickle your fancy then, Chad.
Okay.
Because I agree with you, being in like a tight space like that, I don't dig.
Yeah.
But a New York man has been hospitalized with injuries after an incident that occurred while he was walking down the street. Totally normal, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Videos like CCTVs and whatnot from buildings around there show him waiting by a building when suddenly the entire sidewalk collapses.
Oh no.
Trapping him under rubble and rendering him completely unable to move. So your first thought, right? Call for help.
Sure.
But our boy, our victim, Chad, was afraid to call for help because there were hundreds of rats running around on top of, under him, basically every single possible spot. He was afraid he was going to get a rat in the mouth.
The old rat in the mouth.
The old rat in the mouth.
The old rodent in the mouth trick. I got you.
Apparently, the place that he had fallen into was an abandoned basement of the nearby building he had been standing in front of. That had been abandoned due to its insane rat infestation.
Oh, no. Okay.
So, obviously...
God, that's, for a lot of people, that would be the fears combined.
The rats and the collapse.
I mean, no one should love being around rats, but some people are really terrified of them. That'd be, like, the worst combination.
I don't like the idea of not being able to move. Like, I'm a big guy.
And there's 100 rats around?
See, the rats don't bother me so much. I'm all right with the rats.
Yeah, that's gross. So did he get out?
He got out after hours. Firefighters finally got him out of there, and
okay.
He is being treated for some pretty serious injuries because obviously
sure.
He got like a whole sidewalk on top of him.
I was going to say concrete and all that. And plus, hopefully one of the rats didn't bite him and had rabies or something.
No, I think the medical term would just be major crushage.
Wow.
Had some major crushage going on. But man, I don't like not being able to move like that. I don't like being restrained.
Man, by the way, it's funny you brought that other story up because my HOA just shut down somebody's house because they had a skeleton and there were rodents going right in the mouth. It was just a terrible thing. Big light up rodents right into the skeleton's mouth. Man, that would be bad. That would be bad. We hope you are not trapped under something while you're listening to the show today. Up next, your 2 o'clock hour, Kevin Dunn to talk some Longhorns and baseball. And then part two of Trey's interview with Bruce Campbell of Evil Dead fame. We'll tell you about that Evil Dead screening and how you can go see it. This is The Horn.